U.S. is importing a lot, just not a whole lot of people.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The global financial crisis changed a lot about the way money and goods move around the world. And today we find it's also changed the way people move as well. Immigration to the wealthiest countries, including the United States, fell during the meltdown. In fact, in 2008, immigration to developed nations as a whole dropped 6% from the year before. The BBC's Rebecca Singer is with us live this morning to talk about this trend. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Is this decline really a surprise to anybody?
Well, it did come as a bit of a surprise because according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which publishes these figures, immigration over the past 5 years has risen significantly, and especially if you look at 2007, just before the crash. But obviously, as the economic crisis hit, the number of people moving to the richest countries fell. And one of the reasons being given is that the rising unemployment rate. Obviously, immigrants traditionally work in industries which have suffered most during the slowdown, like construction, hotels and restaurants, and so there's actually less impetus for them to move to find work in developed nations.
And they're not finding the opportunities, obviously. So now, Rebecca, is there a belief this trend is permanent, a permanent change, or could immigration start to grow again?
Well, the most recent data from the national governments for 2009 shows immigration probably continued to fall during that period. But it's a situation the international body, the OECD, hopes doesn't continue. And it's especially worried about the economic problems we're having at the moment that could be used as an excuse to restrict immigration further. So what it's doing is urging governments to assist immigrants who have lost their jobs. They want them to be given unemployment support and help to find new work. Because as we know, and the OECD explains, immigration is essential for industrialized countries to maintain growth, and especially as the economy starts to recover, we'll need those immigrants to fill the labor shortages in things like construction and the hospitality industry.
Mm. All right. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reporting from London for Marketplace. Rebecca, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. The Food and Drug Administration meets tomorrow. It's going to decide whether a best-selling diabetes drug is safe. There's a lot at stake for the drug's maker and for the FDA. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
The FDA slapped a warning label on the drug called Avandia in 2007 when scientists said it was linked to heart attacks and strokes. GlaxoSmithKline, the maker of the drug, responded with counter-studies saying it was safe, but sales of the drug plummeted. Glaxo was accused of knowing about safety risks and concealing them from the FDA.
This is like Vioxx Redux.
Bob Goldberg is with the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. He says that just like with Merck's controversial painkiller, the FDA is trying to keep the discussion about science, but it keeps becoming about politics. At tomorrow's hearing, FDA researchers will testify that senior officials underplayed their concerns about the drug's safety.
If they decide to keep it on the market, they'll be slammed as tools of the industry. If they pull it off the market, the commissioner and the agency's senior leadership will give veto power to all drugs on the market to two or three unelected individuals.
And that has the pharmaceutical industry watching very carefully. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
European shares are mainly higher at the moment. Shares in London, Frankfurt, and Paris are up 0.5%, about, on average. Asian markets closed mostly higher today. Wall Street Friday, another week of gains for most stocks. The Dow was up about 5% to end the week at 10,198.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. By the new Harvard Business Review. The July-August issue is on newsstands now, featuring an in-depth interview with Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. And by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality.
In these days of emails, you got to think the postage stamp is an endangered species. But Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan says no way. They're collectibles. Not, though, for the reasons you think. He's with us now to explain. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Steve.
So what are you talking about?
I'm talking about forever stamps, and this has to do with the rate increase. And if you sit and crunch the numbers, you'll realize that's a 4.5% increase over the current rate. So if you buy forever stamps now and you start using them next year, your annual return is 8 or 9% tax-free, which these days is not bad.
Now, these forever stamps, Alan, were marketed by the post office as a way to, okay, you can get in on whatever the stamps cost now and never have to pay the increase as long as you have these forever stamps. Did they anticipate that people would be buying these and hoarding them like yourself?
They anticipated that people would be buying them. And the other thing they want is they don't want everybody showing up at the post office the day the rate goes up buying 2-cent stamps. So this makes their life easier. Plus, they get paid up front.
What's the point then in raising the rate if people are just going to buy forever stamps?
Well, the point is not everyone's going to buy a forever stamp, and other rates are going up as well. Packages and express mail.
And what else are they talking about to raise some money? I know they were, what, $3.5-4 billion in debt last year. What else are they doing to sort of shore things up?
Well, as you know, they're talking about cutting Saturday service, which I suspect in the end they're not going to get to do for political reasons.
Political reasons? What do you mean political reasons?
Well, Congress has to approve cutting this, and a lot of businesses don't want mail delivered less frequently, and I suspect an average person would rather get mail delivered 6 days than five.
So Alan Sloan says yay to collecting and hoarding forever stamps from the post office, but nay to nixing Saturday delivery service, all right?
That would be my prediction, but I'm just being a good journalist and trying to figure out how we can make a buck off of this.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us. Alan, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, Brian Boland of Thetford, Vermont, built a 25-foot dinosaur structure. He wanted people to have a place to get together and not be charged a fee. But people in the town are torn over the wood plank creation. Some like its roadside Americana look. Others think it's tacky. Because people gather under the dinosaur's wooden belly, the town classifies it as a building. And the state says it's occupying redeveloped land. So that's going to cost Boland a bunch of fees. And he may dismantle the structure and send the Vermontosaurus into extinction. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.